Hello, and welcome to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies.
Thank you for joining us on this, the latest edition of the OIS podcast series. My name is David Ledesma, and I'm chairman of the Natural Gas Programme at the Institute. And it's my great pleasure to be joined today by Patrick Heather, who's Senior Research Fellow at the OIS. And we're here today to discuss the key messages that came out of his chapter, How a Traded Hydrogen Market May Develop, Lessons from the Natural Gas Industry, that was published in the May OIS Energy Forum 2021. Now, just to timestamp this recording, in an ever-changing market, we're recording the podcast on the morning of Thursday, the 17th of June, 2021. Now, Patrick, it's great to have you back here because it's only a year ago since we were sitting talking to our podcast listeners about the changes in the European gas hub market and the supremacy of TTF. Nice to see you.
Hey, thank you, David. It's a pleasure to be here.
Okay, Patrick, well, look, you know, we're here today to talk about the potential development of a traded market in hydrogen, when, of course, you know, there is currently no such market established. So how did you approach this subject in the Oxford Energy Forum article?
With difficulty. Hydrogen is being talked about by the European Commission, the member state governments, the UK government, by energy regulators, the European TSOs, energy industry bodies, you name them, oil and gas companies, even by the press. Everyone at the moment, it's the flavour of the month of the year, is talking about hydrogen. And from my analysis over the years on the liberalisation and development of traded natural gas markets, I wanted to understand whether this current interest in developing hydrogen as a green fuel and to see it become a fully fledged traded market was something that could actually become reality. As the subtitle implies, I wanted to compare and contrast with the development of the traded natural gas markets. And having reviewed the current hydrogen projects, the transportation networks, supply, and especially the demand prospects, I could then evaluate the results in comparison with the development of the natural gas markets over the years.
Okay, so before we start talking about hydrogen, you know, can you share with our listeners how the European traded natural gas market developed and really how it moved from being a nationalised control market to the fully liberalised market that we see today?
Yeah, of course I can, but it's a difficult question to answer in the time we have. But I think to resume, the most important point to note, and in total contrast to the emerging so-called hydrogen market, is that when the vast reserves of natural gas were discovered in the late 1950s, there already existed town or manufactured gas market. Albeit it was a nationalized industry in those days, there already was infrastructure in place to manufacture, transport, distribute that gas to end users. And there was a pricing mechanism according to various tariff structures, invariably decided by governments. The point is, all that infrastructure and mechanism existed. The first major change was to move from town gas to natural gas. That in itself took about 10 years in Britain. And that was some years before the process of liberalisation started to take place in the 1980s. And that process took another 15 years or so, followed by a further, 5 years before the NBP reached maturity. I mean, all the time frames were slightly longer in other European countries. It's a very complex and matter. But if the listeners are interested, the full account of this process is given in the paper I published in December 2015 and is available on the OIS website entitled The Evolution of European Traded Gas Hubs. And that will give a full account of that transition process.
Yeah, and I have to say, Patrick, having read that, you know, people forget that it was a very long and tortuous process. So let's just talk more about kind of the factors that have led to a successful trade in natural gas, because in your paper, you say there are five. And, you know, in order to assess the likelihood of potential traded hydrogen market, these factors should be considered. So could you perhaps share these with us today?
Yes, of course. The five main factors that you refer to are liquidity, volatility, anonymity, trade and traded volumes. They should indeed be taken into account when assessing the likelihood of a potential traded hydrogen market, just as I have been taking those into account, those factors into account, when assessing the success or otherwise of the European traded natural gas markets. Liquidity is maybe the most important, being a measure of how easy it is to trade volumes at any given price without moving the market. It's a measure of market depth and considered essential by traders when looking for a market in which to conduct their risk management strategies. And it is those markets that tend to be, in the end, the most successful, where the traders perform their risk management. Standardization of traded contract terms and conditions is one thing that tends to lead to concentrate liquidity. The second main factor is volatility, a measure of price movement in relation to market activity. And it's often decried by politicians and regulators. But in fact, volatility in a liquid market will attract more traders and therefore will create even more liquidity. Anonymity is something that's linked really to the exchanges and in particular to futures trading. It is the cornerstone of exchange trading, where the clearinghouse, being the counterparty to all trades, therefore allows both small and large participants to trade with each other. And that in itself will bring more traders into that market and will help increase liquidity. Then you have market transparency, very important element in the development of a successful traded market. Having traded volumes and prices quickly disseminated in the public domain will give traders added confidence in that market and, again, will attract traders to that given market. And finally, traded volumes, a bit like a picture paints a thousand words. Well, the absolute traded volumes traded on any given contract, any given market, will give you straight away a snapshot of how successful that market is. It just simply relates to the total actual volume traded, whether over the counter or exchange traded, whether spot or forward contracts.
Okay, well, can we perhaps turn our discussions for a few minutes to talk about infrastructure? Because, you know, there are, of course, key differences between natural gas network infrastructure and that of hydrogen. So why do you see these as so important?
The main reason is that there is currently very little installed hydrogen network infrastructure. That is to say, a transportation network across Britain, or indeed across Europe, a spider's web, if you like, that is being used to move hydrogen around. And this is in complete contrast to the natural gas network of high-pressure pipelines, distribution networks to the final customers, whether they're industrial, commercial, or residential. The grids we have today are far more extensive than in the days of town gas, but are a result of progressive investment over the years. Comparing with the existing hydrogen infrastructure in Europe, it can be said that the situation is worse than it was in the gas market in the 1960s, because there is currently virtually no hydrogen infrastructure and no underlying general market, except, of course, for some specialist and localized needs in the industrial and medical sectors, plus very limited transportation users. So without such a network, it is difficult to envisage a traded hydrogen market if there is no underlying physical market servicing and established supply-demand infrastructure.
But doesn't the European Hydrogen Backbone report that was published in April 2021 say that there will be 11,600 kilometres of network by 2030, and this will rise to 39,700 kilometres by 2040? So I just ask myself, is hydrogen infrastructure really an issue?
Yes, it is. It is. And it really does matter. But it must be reiterated that this is a project still in its initial phase, and that despite that apparent positive support of many gas TSOs, those pipeline distances are aspirations, projections at best. In fact, the report does say that the backbone could consist of nearly 40,000 kilometres by 2040. As far as I'm aware, there is no concrete financing in place yet. But given that about 70% of the backbone is expected to be made up of repurposed natural gas pipelines, and that the natural gas TSOs are therefore very keen to see future revenue from their assets, it is possible that a hydrogen backbone can be built. I think there is still much to do to arrive at such a network in a relatively short time. However, with the right political will and the necessary financing in place, it certainly could be done.
Very optimistic, Patrick. I'm really pleased to hear that, which brings us actually on to some example projects, because, you know, in your paper, you specifically talk about several example hydrogen projects that are currently under development. So perhaps you can share with our listeners a few details on these and, you know, what do we learn from these projects?
Well, apart from the hydrogen, European hydrogen backbone, which is, let's face it, supported by 23 European TSOs from 21 countries, and which is the most ambitious project out there at the moment. There are some other notable projects to mention. Probably the first one to mention, and which is also very ambitious, is in Britain, the H21 North of England project, proposing to convert the natural gas networks across the North of England to hydrogen between 2028 and 2034. It will also include the sequestration of CO2. And if completed, it plans to deliver 125 gigawatt capacity hydrogen transmission system, delivering low carbon heat across the north of England from Newcastle and Hull in the east, Manchester and Liverpool in the west. And that area would represent about 17% of UK domestic meter connections. So a very important project. It is obviously supported by National Grid and some of the other TSOs in Britain, supported by the British government. And there has been some initial financing, mainly for research and analysis to see what the results might be. The actual funding to create the project is still to be decided, but there are some very big names involved. A more focused project, going from one extreme to another maybe, is one in Italy being led by Snam, the Italian TSO, looking to adapt a steelmaking process at the Dalmine plant in northern Italy to use green hydrogen instead of natural gas by generating hydrogen and oxygen through a 20-megawatt electrolyzer. There are more hydrogen projects around Europe, many focused in the Netherlands, including several by Hassini, the Dutch TSO, and another led by the Port of Rotterdam, both putting forward their visions of a national and local hydrogen infrastructure backbone. What these and other similar projects tell us is that the gas industry in general, and the infrastructure companies in particular, are keen to participate in the transition from natural gas to hydrogen. And many of these projects, as I said about the British one, have received this initial financing, and I must stress it is initial financing, to fund the analysis and produce the feasibility studies. But not one of the projects has so far received financing for its implementation. And that really is a question that needs to be answered, sorted out, if you like, to see progress.
Okay, can we perhaps move on to talk about one of the other points you raise in your chapter in the May 2021 Oxford Energy Forum, and that is to do with political and regulatory support. Because, you know, to quote you, you say, one important element of analysing the prospect of a future traded hydrogen market is the consideration of the political and regulatory framework that must support such a market and create the right environment to attract market participants. So I'm just wondering, you know, Patrick, why is this a challenge?
Well, yes, it is a challenge. It certainly was a challenge in the liberalisation development of the natural gas markets, which is in part the reason why various European countries have followed the path to maturity at very different speeds with varying levels of success. It is vitally important that the right political messages are given early on and that the politicians allow the market to develop organically without too much prescribed intervention, and especially not too early in the process. Of course, there will be need to regulate the market, to have a regulatory framework, but this must be measured and commensurate to the requirements of the hydrogen market at each stage of its development. What I would say is, do not stifle the market before it's born.
So let's move on to the concept of the traded market for hydrogen. Now, in the chapter of the OEF, you included a chart, Criteria for Hydrogen Market Development and Maturity, which, you know, mirrors similar steps that have been taken and seen in the European gas market and other developing markets globally. But Interesting, in your paper, you say the demand for hydrogen needs to increase substantially for there to be any chance of a traded market to be established. So I'm just wondering, you know, is there demand and the will for the liberalisation path to be the same as hydrogen as it was for natural gas? A long question, but really, actually, Patrick, quite a fundamental one.
It certainly is. Naturally, there cannot be any sort of real open competitive market if there is no substantive demand for hydrogen spread across the country or region where trading could take place. And there is today an established supply-demand chain for hydrogen, even in quite large absolute quantities. But it is very much limited geographically and to the number of companies involved. That is the big difference. What we are contemplating is whether this can expand to reach a much wider customer base over greater geographical areas. The demand for hydrogen needs to increase substantially for there to be any chance of a traded market being established and developing. I believe industrial use can possibly expand and possibly very fast if it's given access to hydrogen and at a competitive cost. The development of transportation usage, both in road vehicles and trains, is already happening, but rather slowly. The main stumbling block on the demand side appears to be in the residential sector, although several projects, like the H21 in Britain already mentioned, are assessing that viability. What might still need to be achieved, though, is the reassurance to the general public that the use of hydrogen is safe. There is a perception that it is not, despite the proof otherwise. As to the path of maturity that you mentioned, which I published in that 2015 paper I mentioned earlier, will be substantively the same as that for natural gas, but with the added essential criteria of demand and physical infrastructure placed as the first steps. Without those, we are not going to start progressing along that path of maturity.
Okay, so that perhaps kind of brings us to kind of more broader question, Patrick. You know, what will impact the pace of demand for hydrogen? And, you know, what are the demand scenarios? What do you think?
It's quite difficult, really, to formulate very accurate demand scenarios given the current lack of an established physical market beyond those specialised industries I just mentioned. However, I believe that the overall demand for hydrogen and its speed of introduction as a day-to-day source of energy will largely depend on various energy transition scenarios towards a green economy. I'm not an economist. I'm just going to give what I believe, and those I put in my article are the three basic alternative scenarios, if you like. Firstly, it is possible to envisage a failed transition, especially after the current COVID-19 pandemic. The huge cost to all economies and the perceived poor management by the EU and other governments. In this scenario, it would be very hard to envisage the building of costly infrastructure for hydrogen and the development of a market. Secondly, it is quite likely that there will be some form of slow or business-as-usual transition with further political promises of future environmental targets, but without real political push or financial support necessary to even reach the 2030 targets. In this scenario, there will be development of further local hydrogen clusters and small networks linking supply sources to demand, but little progress on national, yet alone pan-national infrastructure. And finally, we could witness a move towards a fast transition, especially after COP26 in Glasgow later this year, with a renewed political vigour towards meeting both the 2030 and 2050 targets. In this scenario, there would be legislation and financing to enable a concerted push to develop hydrogen infrastructure, which in turn would naturally lead to a developing and growing market.
Okay, so Patrick, you know, we're coming to the end of our podcast. And as I think you know, I always like to end these recordings with a kind of forward-looking question. Now, picking up on your comment earlier in this podcast that the conversion from town gas to natural gas took, 10 years in Britain, and it took nearly 15 years to complete the process of liberalisation, and then you know, another 5 years for the British NBP to become a liquid and mature trading hub, you know, where do you think we're headed with hydrogen? You know, will we ever see a traded market in hydrogen? And if yes, you know, what must happen to get there?
And as you know, David, I'm very much a glass half full person. So I will conclude that as long as the industry and the politicians focus on the end goal and don't get sidetracked by issues of detail before a market develops, the overall time frame to do so could be actually much shorter than that for natural gas. A very quick reality check will show that there is no doubting the desire and vision of politicians and gas TSOs for a future hydrogen economy. But, and this is actually a big but, there is still a very long way to go before such an economy will be found in even Northwest Europe, yet alone across all of Europe. Much will depend, I think, on the speed of the energy transition. But realistically, and maybe slightly optimistically, I do think it is feasible that there will be a traded market by 2040 and possibly even quite developed by then and well on that path to maturity.
Well, Patrick, you know, we always believe what you say, and that's such optimism. And we will probably come back in 2040 and ask you, if you don't mind, as to whether that what you've just said is true. But, you know, to our listeners, you know, I hope you've enjoyed this podcast. As always, I love having a conversation with Patrick, who's such an enthusiastic interviewee. And please, you know, go to our website and read the paper. And I hope you've enjoyed it. Goodbye to everyone.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies. You can find other podcasts, as well as all our written research, on our website at www.oxfordenergy.org. If you would like more details about our oil, gas, electricity or China programmes, then please contact us at information@oxfordenergy.org.